Happy Christmas, everyone. I do hope you enjoy and are very blessed by this season. It's great to be together this morning. So I wanted to tell you about many years ago, we met Fred from Rwanda on his first visit to the UK and his first experience of Christmas as we know it. And as we shared a meal with him, he asked us to tell him about the story of Santa Claus. And he listened with wide-eyed wonder as we laughed our way through all the details. And it got me thinking that when we grow up with traditions, we can so easily take them for granted. And that can happen when we hear the account of the Christmas story of Jesus' birth on annual repeat. But hopefully this morning we'll restore some of our wide-eyed wonder about that as we continue in our series called Finding the Real Christmas. Over the past 2 weeks, we've considered the familiar characters of Joseph, Mary, and the shepherds, and some strange aspects of the Christmas story. And now, as the narrative unfolds, we come to another group of key figures, the kings. I've just realised I haven't got the clicker. We have some pictures for you, which we'd only get with the clicker. Sorry. Thank you. Okay. Yes. Okay, so as I was saying, we're talking about the kings. As we once again question why God might have planned his son's arrival on earth in this way. And as we do, we can be confident that like a composer writing a symphony, God has designed and placed every detail, every intricate detail he's placed. Let's just check this is working. Okay. So let's take a look at Matthew chapter 2, verses 2 to 13. Matthew tells us that after Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea during the time of King Herod, Magi from the east came to Jerusalem and asked, "Where is the one who has been born King of the Jews? When we saw his star when it rose and have come to worship him." When Herod heard this, he was disturbed and all Jerusalem with him. When he called together all the people's chief priests and teachers of the law, he asked them where the Messiah was to be born. "In Bethlehem in Judea," they replied, "for this is what the prophet has written." "But you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah. For out of you will come a ruler who will shepherd my people Israel." Then Herod called the Magi secretly and found out from them the exact time the star had appeared. He sent them to Bethlehem and said, "Go and search carefully for the child. As soon as you find him, report to me so that I too may go and worship him." After they had heard the king, they went on their way, and the star they had seen when it rose went ahead of them until it stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they were overjoyed. Sorry. I haven't written in the text where I change. Thank you. On coming to the house, they saw the child with his mother, Mary, and they bowed down and worshipped him. Then they opened their treasures and presented him with gifts. Thank you. Of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And having been warned in a dream not to go back to Herod, they returned to their country by another route. When they had gone, an angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream. "Get up," he said, "take the child and his mother and escape to Egypt. Stay there until I tell you, for Herod is going to search for the child to kill him." You might have noticed that there's reference to three kings in this passage, namely the group of Magi from the east, who we often think of as kings, King Herod, and Jesus, King of the Jews. We'll begin by talking about these guys. If our mental picture of them comes from school nativity plays and greetings cards, we may have to burst a few bubbles this morning. We may have assumed that they were kings, but actually Matthew refers to them as magi or wise men. We may have presumed that because they gave three gifts, or that three are specified, that there were only three men, but the group were unnumbered. We could assume they were scientists, but we only know they trusted constellations and dreams for signs and guidance. We may imagine they were at the stable with the shepherds, but they arrived later and discovered Jesus at the house. Matthew is the only gospel writer to refer to these mystery men, and so we don't know much about them, what they were like or what they believed. But we can ponder what significance they might have in the Christmas story. Let's take a look at this beautiful painting. It's called The Adoration of the Magi by Carlo Dolci and depicts the scene of these spiritual seekers as they meet the king they'd been searching for. Here we see that Jesus is central, with the star above and the halo symbolizing this as a holy scene. We can sense the elation and awe of the Magi through the posture of the man with the turban, who appears to be falling forward in worship, and the face of the man kneeling in front of Jesus, whose face shows an expression of absolute adoration. The artist has captured a beautiful moment. This summer, I visited Buckingham Palace as a paying guest with thousands of other people. Now, that is a grand and impressive building and a likely place to meet a king. But the Magi found royalty in a very different setting. We can imagine the scene. After months of travelling through foreign lands, these highly educated, wealthy men arrived with anticipation at the small rural town of Bethlehem. The situation probably didn't look like they'd expected. They'd followed one specific star until it hovered over one specific house. Imagine if that happened at your home. It's not normal and sounds like something from a science fiction movie. And this pilgrimage of the Magi ended at the home of a teenage girl with a child who'd seemingly been born into poverty with no status or political connections. And yet, despite the limited evidence, when they found Jesus, they acknowledged him as a king and were overjoyed. It's difficult to make a modern comparison. We might expect relatives to get emotional at the arrival of a new baby, but we wouldn't expect strangers to act in this way, not to spend a fortune on travel and lavish gifts, or call the child a king, and certainly not to bow down before them. These were strange events. And why might God have chosen these men who weren't even Jews to be the first to announce that Jesus is their king? The wise men came from a land far away, which is probably modern-day Iraq, Iran, or Saudi Arabia. So they were outsiders, and remind us of God's inclusivity. Together with the shepherds who visited Jesus, they represent everyone on the social, educational, and economic scale. Their presence shows us that Jesus loves and came for all people, of all ages, from all nations, and throughout all generations. Their welcome signifies that the kingdom of God is for those who feel excluded. Let's not forget that Jesus himself and his family fled to Egypt as refugees, and he understands how it feels to be an outsider. Some of us will have felt that feeling, and it can be a lonely place. When it comes to church, the other people there might not always look like or be like we expect. Or it may be we feel that we don't fit in because of our history or habits, our finances or failings. We can be fully assured that God welcomes each of us personally, you and me, and all the people in our world, those we love, as well as those it's difficult to like. As we keep that truth in mind, what difference could it make in our interactions this Christmas? At West Suffolk Vineyard Church, we aim to be inclusive. Many of you will remember that 3 years ago, some people from Afghanistan were invited to this country for safety. And since then, we've been supporting some local Afghan families with English lessons and social events in order to help them feel welcome and like they belong. This is something extraordinary that God is doing right here in this place. Matthew used the wise men to establish Jesus' status as a king right from the onset of the gospel. They bowed in recognition of his authority and said, "We have come to worship him." And the word worship here means to bow one's face to the ground as an expression of deep respect. They literally demonstrated that the most wise and appropriate response to Jesus was and is to bow down. And whether we bow our head or physically bow or metaphorically, this is a way, without even using words, in which we can show God our attitude of humility and genuine surrender. Sometimes we lose our focus in all the busyness and emotions of this season. And I'd like us to pause and think about our personal response to Jesus today. You might like to close your eyes and just take a few deep breaths as we notice what's going on in our inner world. Is our heart bowed to Jesus? Or has he been crowded out by many other things? Do we want to enthrone Jesus in our lives again? Or maybe say yes to his kingship for the very first time? Let's take a few moments to talk to him about our response. It seems that every good story has a bad guy, and our account of Jesus' childhood certainly does, in the form of the next king in the story, King Herod. He'd been appointed by Rome and was known as a self-seeking tyrant who was paranoid of anyone he deemed a threat to his reign. That's why he lied to the Magi and pretended he was eager to bow down to the newborn king, when in reality his intentions were murderous. The cold character of Herod is a stark contrast to the wise men. What might have kept Herod from bowing to Jesus? Pride, selfishness, fear? Aren't these the very things which harden our hearts and so easily keep us from him? It could be interesting to ask ourselves, how do people experience me in the festive season? Maybe you're an upbeat, jingle all the way sort of person. And well, that's great. But there may be times when we find ourselves being grouchy or greedy or overly anxious. Last week, I tried to do a quick flip round the busy shops. And when I got back to the car, I realised I'd been scowling the whole time. I hope none of you saw me. I've learned that I can be both irritated and irritating. And I've already eaten far too many mince pies, raided the chocolates, and had a few fretful nights. So King Herod made some cruel choices, and we could feel good about ourselves in comparison. But at this time of year, might there be ways in which we've become a little bit like him? God, in his mercy, is always ready to forgive and to help us. Then we have a daily choice. Will we surrender to him and welcome his work of transformation in us? Now let's look at the third king who's mentioned in our Bible passage, King Jesus. H.G. Wells, the author, admitted, "I am not a believer, but I must confess as a historian that this penniless preacher from Nazareth is irrevocably the very center of history. Jesus Christ is easily the most dominant figure in all history." So why was this the narrative God chose for the most important person? The Israelites had been promised a messianic king who would be called Wonderful, Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. And the people of Jesus' generation had been waiting expectantly for a military deliverer. But Jesus came as a suffering servant, motivated by love, humility, and compassion, to be punished for the wrongdoing of others. So most people didn't recognize him, a carpenter's son, as Emmanuel, God with us. The wise men had called Jesus King of the Jews, and that was the title nailed above him on the cross. But the Bible gives Jesus an even bolder title. We see in Timothy's statement, which is in 1 Timothy chapter 6, verses 13 to 15, Timothy says that Jesus is the blessed and only sovereign, the King of kings and Lord of lords. To be a king means to have power and sovereignty. To be the king over all kings and to be king of heaven and earth means to have all power. And there is no one more powerful than Jesus. His kingship changes our lives and changes the world. His kingdom will never come to an end. He will reign forever. Let's come back to the painting, The Adoration of the Magi. There's good news for us today. Jesus is still the King of Kings. And as he's central in this painting, His rightful place is at the centre of our hearts and lives. He's done everything he can to help humanity find him. His very arrival was announced in the skies with the stars and angels, and his kingship was proclaimed by wise men. And throughout his time on earth, Jesus continued to make it crystal clear that he is God's son, as he demonstrated his authority through miracles, healings, teachings, and ultimately through his death and resurrection. So why did God, the script writer, make things happen in this particular way? We can be sure that he had the bigger picture in mind, had planned the end from the beginning, and had woven the mission of Jesus into every detail. And what does that mean for us this morning? Maybe you identified with the word outsider and long to experience God's love and inclusivity. Maybe you struggle with hard-heartedness or some other issue and long to be changed. And maybe this Christmas you want to welcome Jesus as King on the throne of your life.